You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 96 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I am very pleased to be joined by Sydney this evening, or this afternoon, where you are. Welcome to the podcast, Sydney.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. And we are here to talk about your daughter and her short segment, Hirschsprung's. I know you said a little bit as well that she's about a year and a half, is that right?
Yep.
17 months today. 17 months today. Oh, happy 17-month birth. That's not really a thing, is it? But if you'd like, you can start from just sort of the very beginning, if that's okay.
Yep, I can do that. So we had a pretty normal pregnancy. Everything was looking good. Nothing, no red flags, no high risk, nothing. And normal delivery. She was eating really good the first two times she breastfed, was really good. And then she just got like super tired. And then she started like gagging every time she was laid flat. And then she started spitting up. So one of the nurses took her and suctioned her out. And they're like, yeah, sometimes they can just get the fluid stuck in their lungs and their little stomachs and stuff. So they didn't really think anything of it. And we were still like attempting to breastfeed, but she wasn't having it. And every time she'd lay flat, she'd still just gag and gag. So finally, the OB supervisor came in on the second day that we were still in the hospital. And they're like, well, she still hasn't pooped, so we're going to keep you another day, like monitor and everything. And then I told her about what was going on with her gagging and her puking and the not eating. And she's like, well, that's weird. She was eating so good the day before. And so she took her and suctioned her out again. And then she says she got like 5 milliliters of like just cruddy stuff out of her. And then as soon as she got done suctioning her out, she had puked bile. And so she called our doctor back in. And our doctor was like, oh, we're going to do some abdominal x-rays if that's okay with you. And I was like, yes, please. Like, give us some answers. Absolutely. And this was at a little rural hospital that it's about 30 miles from where we live. And the labor and delivery room floor that we were on, it wasn't even a floor, I guess. It was just a section of the hospital. But there's only 3 beds in it. So, like, it's tiny. And, yeah, she's like, oh, the x-rays don't look very good. It's not enough to be diagnostic, but it's enough for us to send it on to the children's hospital and see what they recommend. I was like, oh boy, okay, that's fine. And at this point, it's like 11 p.m. at night of like day two of her life, not even. And so they heard back like right away and they're like, yep, they want to come get her. They're going to take her by airplane. The children's hospital is like a little over 2 hours from us. And so they send their team by plane to our little rural airstrip airport that we have. And then the local volunteer ambulance went and picked their team up and brought them to the hospital. And they came in and introduced themselves and told us like what all was going to happen. They placed an IV and an OG tube. And then they switched her to suction in their little incubator thing. And they're like, we're going to take really good care of your baby. Like when we get there, we're going to do like the barium enema x-ray the x-ray and do all these tests to see what's going on. And I was like, okay, sounds good. Yeah, we didn't get to ride in the plane.
Oh.
So we had to watch her get wheeled out. And then it was like 3 in the morning at this point, 2 or 3. And, we went out, packed all our stuff up as fast as we could, and went to go get to our Suburban, and the battery was dead. So our nurse came out, jumped our car, and then we followed behind the airplane and our car, and we got up there. And as soon as we were getting to Omaha, which is where the Nebraska Children's Hospital is, our doctor, one of the doctors, with his called us and told us that she finally made it, and like they were getting her in and taking her down to the enema x-ray, and it's like, okay. So they took us up to the NICU room that she was gonna be in, and we got to like briefly see her as she was wheeled back out of the room to go down, and then it was just like silence. There's nothing. And I was like, oh, this is terrifying. But when they had the surgery team come up after her enema, and we're like, well, we see something that's really concerning, and it kind of looks like a perforation of the bowel. And so we're like, they're like, so we're going to take her into surgery right away and do an X-lap and see what we see that's going on. She's like, I'm worried about malrotation. I'm worried about the perforation. I'm worried about like any shrinkages or anything. And I was like, okay, terrifying, running on no sleep. And that's, yeah, not what you want to hear. But we're like, yeah, signed all the consent forms, and they had her under general anesthesia, just done, like she wasn't hardly moving or anything. And then she was wheeled back up. We got a text from their children's thing saying that surgery is done, closing her up now, and then like we got to follow along that way. And then they brought her back up, and they're like, well, no, we didn't see any perforation. There was nothing. It all looked pretty good, but there was tons of meconium plugs. And so they're like, we kind of like got some flushed out from what we could, but they wanted to do a rectal biopsy then too, but there was too much meconium, so they couldn't even do a rectal biopsy. So they're like, we're just going to let her heal up, and then see if her intestines like wake up a little bit, because sometimes newborns just need a little bit of time for them to like wake up. And so she was like probably the biggest baby in the NICU floor, because she was a term baby. She's 7 pounds and 11 ounces when she was born. So she never went under the 7 pound mark, which is good. But yeah, they brought her back up, and she was still out from the anesthesia, and it was terrifying seeing her hooked up to the ventilator and all the IVs and everything, and not even a 2-day-old baby. But yeah, so then they just like let her wake up on her own for a little bit. And then she was still NPO. So they switched her to TPN and lipids, and they put her a PIC line in her leg. And so for about, I want to say almost a week, she was just on the NPO and the lipids, and they were seeing if that she would like poop on her own at all, or like if she'd have any change. And we're like, okay, nothing's happening, but like her belly never got really distended or anything. So they were like, I don't know. They didn't do any more x-rays or anything while that was going on. And then they ended up doing a rectal biopsy bedside, probably 4 days after the surgery. And then they're like, hey, you're going to get your results in like 4 to 5 days. And I was like, we have to wait that long again? Like, we've been here for so long. You know, at this point, we're just like, we just want to take our baby home. Like, we have no idea what's going on. We had never heard of Hirschsprung's before. And they're like, yeah, we're just going to look for this like Hirschsprung's disease. So then we went and, you know, dove into the Google deep dive. And that said, you know, 1 in 5,000 kids, mostly in boys, like sometimes mostly hereditary. And we're like, there's no way. Like, our family has no history of this. No way. Nope. Yeah. It came back that she was lacking the cells in her, in the very bottom part of her rectum. And we're like, huh. All right. So what do we do from here? So then we started irrigations while we were still in the NICU. We caught on how to do those pretty quickly. And then she ended up, we started doing feeds by the bottle, and she was doing pretty good with those, but they weren't happy with the amount she was taking. So we put an NG tube in so we could see if her tummy would tolerate the amount of milk that they would like her to have, and then see if like the irrigations would keep up with that amount of milk in her tummy. And so she did. She ended up doing pretty good. We were in the NICU for 18 days total. And then we finally got to take her home. We did irrigations 3 times a day. And then they wanted her to get bigger and stronger before they did her pull-through surgery. And so, and they wanted her first X-lap scar to heal. And so they didn't run into any scar tissue while they were doing her pull-through. And so about 2.5 months old is when we went back to children's. And we did the pull-through surgery, and they ended up taking about 20 centimeters out, right up next to her sigmoid colon is where the surgeon said that it was. And she's like, yep, you could definitely tell right where it ended too, because we got in there and the bad part was all super skinny and looked pretty dead. And she's like, but the other stuff looked really, really like healthy and fleshy. And I was like, well, that's good. But yeah, when they did that pull through, they went in and they did like the biopsies all the way up to where it was healthy again during the pull through. And then they're like, yeah, it'll probably be like another 4 to 5 day stay when you guys have your pull through surgery. So that's what we had expected. And her pull through surgery was on a Thursday. And the next day, she had already started like pooping by herself and like doing pretty good, eating again. And so they're like, oh, she's doing really good. And I was like, that's good. I'm like, I don't know. But then she started to get the diaper rash again. And so we were battling that. But the next day, the Saturday, they're like, yeah, you guys can go home. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, what? My husband had gone home to work because he was like, yeah, you guys are going to be here till like Monday or Tuesday. I'll come back and get you that day or whatever. And so I called him. I was like, they're sending us home early. Like, we got to go home today. And he's like, what? And so he packed up and came and got us. And then, yeah, our surgeon was like, hey, do you like cake? And I was like, not really. And he's like, well, this is going to be like frosting a cake on her bottom. She's like, just layer it on. And that's one of the one things that I just remember distinctly him saying. If you like icing on a cake, just layer it on like you're icing a cake. When he's like, the less touching of the diaper and her bottom, the better. And I was like, okay. So yeah, her diaper rash got pretty gnarly, but we ended up getting it figured out and got a cream that worked best for her bottom. And then she ended up, like, when we had the NG tube, she ended up ripping it out herself. And so luckily we, like, before we left the NICU, they trained us how to place it and do all of that. But she ended up taking her bottles by herself after that, her whole amount. So we're like, apparently she was just ready. So she ripped it out and she'd been growing pretty good. She just stayed on breast milk. And then we had checkups, like, it seemed like every week. I don't think it was actually every week, but it seemed like every week. And we'd have to go clear 2 hours away to the children's hospital. And then we had some follow-ups with the rural hospital ones too. So it just seemed like we were go, go, go. But she did really good and she healed up pretty quick. And that was like June. June would have been when she had her pull-through surgery. And she was staying healthy. She was doing really good. And then last August, she got her first round of enterocolitis. Yeah, and she had her tummy got pretty swollen. And we were like, oh, this is not good. Like, she went downhill really fast. Like, she had just started with, like, a little bit of spit up. And then she just kept puking and kept puking and kept puking. And she just got, like, a tiny fever. It was pretty low grade. But I was like, this is, yeah, she is not doing well. And then she stopped pooping. So we're like, yep, we're going in. Like, she checked too many boxes. So we took her in and she had another, it was probably a 3-4 day hospital stay. And she had the IV flagyl, the fluids, the irrigations, the works. And she pulled through pretty quick. And then we were doing good. And then last April, she went through it again when she was puking. And it was because she had rhinovirus and the human metapneumovirus, I think. Ended up knocking her out again, and they were worried she was going to get enterocolitis again. So we stayed a couple more nights. And then this past early August, she was puking again, and it was the same thing. Rhinovirus knocked her again. But otherwise, she's growing really good and walking around being crazy and sassy. And her scars are still there. She's got one in her belly button. And then there's two little ones at the top, two quadrants of her belly. And then one on the lower quadrant of her belly. And then she's got her big scar from her ex-lap still. But we call them her battle wounds. And hopefully she'll show them off with pride later. But we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's it's an incredibly interesting story because it's not the typical, or not that there is really a typical hurt bump story, but it's not, there's parts of it that are typical, the sort of the vomiting bile and all of that stuff. But the perforation of the bowel is something I've not I've only heard a couple of times before. And did they sort of give a reason as to why? Was it just basically too full, or was there?
I think so. I think that they thought they saw on the contrast enema that some of the contrast was like leaking into her abdomen. I think that's what they thought. They're like, well, you just want to get her in. And I was like, okay, if it's just a hole in her intestines, we'll just like sew it up and we'll be good to go. Yeah. Nope. Not at all. But yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's something that, again, I haven't heard very often, but it is definitely a warning sign that they do give you that, you know, if things do get too full, then it might, you know, certain things might pop and burst and all that stuff. Yeah. And it's interesting when you because Hirschsprung's wasn't obviously mentioned straight away because they've got to do all sorts of stuff. And then when they do mention it, some hospitals say, oh, don't Google it. Because they don't want to scare you, and some hospitals sort of leave you to do whatever. But I think you had the same reaction as a lot of people do, where they go, yeah, but it's 1 in 5,000. Yeah, that's
yeah,
and especially as you have a daughter as well. You know, it's I think again nobody knows for exactly certain, but roughly 1 in 5,000, roughly 3 out of every 4 are boys. Yeah. So, and to have, you know, no family history as well, the chance, I mean, you probably sat there and thought, yeah, I mean, it's the same symptoms, but yeah, there's no way, really.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. But yeah, when we got sent to Children's when she was first born, they just consider it meconium ileus. That's all they had it labeled as. And so we're like, what? Like, so we ruled like meconium ileus and, you know, like causes of this. And we're like, well, this big word came up, but what? There's no way. And then, you know, it says that sometimes it's linked to like more common in people with like Down syndrome or something like that. And we're like, well, that's weird. But she got like the sweat test for cystic fibrosis too, because she had the meconium ileus. And I guess in Nebraska, they say you're supposed to get them tested for cystic fibrosis if they have meconium ileus on their newborn screening. So I don't know, but that was negative too. So we're like, there's no, like, what is this? We don't, you know, it's weird.
That's interesting, the cystic fibrosis as well, because there's a, and I think, I don't know whether that's a worldwide thing, because there's a few people that say, oh, they have, their baby has had this test, and there's quite a few that don't. And I don't know whether it's certain hospitals or certain countries, or I don't know, but it doesn't seem to be a worldwide thing, and I think potentially it should be, because I guess at that stage you want to rule everything out, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The sweat test was really weird too. It's just like a coil thing they put on her arm, and then they just make it like a hot pack around it, and then they can just test to see if she had cystic fibrosis through her sweat. And I was like, that is really weird. But yep, that came back negative too. And so like, yeah, we're gonna go ahead with the biopsy and get all that figured out. And we're like, okay, like, I guess. And then she had pooped like by herself after the biopsy with more like meconium, and they're like, well, she's pooping on her own, so it's not like it's, she just has to have her intestines wake up. And nope, they just kept waiting and kept waiting, and they're like, yeah, she can, like, sometimes it just takes a long time. And we're like, well, how long is too long? Like, she has gone like now like 3 or 4 days without actually pooping, without having like the biopsy. And we just got tired of waiting a lot of times. They're like, we just want answers.
Yeah, I think you're exactly like a lot of people I talk to. And it's the unfortunate thing, especially when there's no hereditary Hirschsprungs. They almost go through everything else first.
Yeah.
And then say, because I don't know exactly, but I wonder whether it's potentially because the biopsy is so invasive.
Yeah,
I mean, they don't necessarily want to go and do the biopsy unless they absolutely have to.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if they explain anything as to why it took as long as it did.
Mm-mm. We wondered the same thing. And then we were like, well, maybe it's just because she had just had the X-lap. So maybe that's why they were just waiting for things to heal a little bit more. Because I mean, she was pretty, like, her incision was pretty bruised for a while, but they'd still come in and, like, poke around and make sure everything was still soft. But they never said why they didn't do the biopsy right away. But I don't know. That's what I would assume. But I'm not sure.
It's probably one of those things that's after the fact, isn't it? Now that you know a lot more about Hirschsprungs and you know about irrigations and you know about what to look for, what's right and what's not right,
right.
It's kind of, everything probably seems a little bit more obvious and thinking, well, of course she had Hirschsprungs. But at the time, probably every...
Not many rags. Why do you...
Exactly. Yeah. At the time, you're probably thinking, oh, it could be this, it could be that, it could be the other. But now you're going, well, of course it was Hirschsprungs. There was no, you know, there's no reason as to... She showed a lot of the classic signs, as I said, with the bile and with the... With the sort of not pass, did she not pass meconium?
Oh, no, not in her first few days of life. No,
yeah. So on a
biopsy, so
yeah, and that ticks all the boxes of Hirschsprungs. It just does. I mean,
right.
So it, yeah. On probably looking back, you probably think actually it was obvious, but at the time, right. But yeah. So especially when people say it's genetic and there's a lot of schools of thought on that, and I don't know how you think about it in terms of whether it's genetic, but I mean I've met so many people who they have it and their children don't, or and they have this one and they and their brothers and sisters don't have it. I don't know, what have you done sort of really much digging into genetics and this, that, the other?
No, we haven't done anything with our genetics, but I don't know if like her case would warrant it, since we really have no background of it at all. But we haven't. I've meant to ask a few times, but it always just, every time we go to a follow-up, it always just spaces my mind, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe if we have another kid and the kid has it again, maybe then we should go and get some testing.
Maybe, but then it's so strange, because I meet so many people who, I mean, I've met somebody who has no Hirschsprungs in the family, but her two sons do. And then I meet people who have no Hirschsprungs in the family, but one child does.
Yep.
I mean, like my situation, I'm one of four, but I'm the only one who's got it. You know, and I was the second born, so it wasn't like I was the first. Right. So that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So it's a minefield, and if anyone can come up with the answer, that would be amazing. On listening can say this, that, the other. But
right.
I want to touch on endocarditis. I know your daughter's had three bouts of endocarditis, which is obviously, you know, very, very scary, very...
Yes.
And in terms of its probability, I think it's around, I mean, it's a lot higher than I think, certainly I realized at the start, about 50% of children born with Hirschsprungs then contract some form of enterocolitis. Mm-hmm. I don't know what did the doctors say to you? Was it kind of, she's had the three bouts and then they are sort of just seeing how she goes, or is it sort of looking for signs, or how's that sort of working at the moment?
The station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tenna Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tenna Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, so when we got discharged from her pull-through surgery is when they really started like hounding us about look for these signs, and like I joined the Hirschsprung's Facebook group. And like I joined that right away, right when I figured out that she had Hirschsprung's. I was like, I want to learn everything. So I just like immersed myself in it. And a lot of it was enterocolitis. So then I was like, look for these signs, the distension, the vomiting, the fever, the lethargy, the like grogginess, loss of appetite, all of that. So I was like, okay, we're gonna make a note of these all the time. And so that's what they reiterated to us after her pull through, because from her, like when we were just doing the irrigations daily, like it seemed like she didn't hardly get sick at all. She was doing really good. We just kept everything moving. It was going really good. And then she started getting some trap gas like more often. And this was about a week or two before her first bout of enterocolitis. And so I was like, maybe this is just because she's like growing, and I don't know, sometimes that happens. And so I just kept monitoring it and kept monitoring it. And then I would like reach out to her surgery team. And I was like, this is what's been going on. They're like, just monitor. If she gets worse, like, let us know. And then she started puking. And I was like, well, I don't know if it's spit up or like puke. Because at that point, it was just a little bit. And like, she had had a runny nose. And every time that she gets a runny nose, it seems like it just triggers her. And she just pukes a lot with it, and she just has so much extra like mucus in her system, and like her irrigations would always get like really mucusy too if she had a runny nose. And so they were like, okay, she's puking, like she gets a fever, she stops pooping, bring her in. I was like, okay. And she did both of those things. And so the first bout was the worst. That was the worst that she's had it. Like when she was puking like the night before, but it was just small amounts and it just seemed like spit up, and she was still drinking a bottle. And so we're like, they're just like, just monitor. And then the next morning she was still kind of not herself, but a little better. And then about lunchtime hit and she just puked and puked and puked. And at this time I had an in-home daycare. So I was like calling the families. I was like, hey, we're going to have to take Loretta into children's because she just won't stop puking and they want us to bring her in. So you guys got to come pick up your kids. And they're like, okay. So my husband stayed with the daycare kids and his mom came with me to children's so I could make sure she didn't like aspirate on any of her vomit. And then that's when it turned to vial was in the 2-hour car ride there. And so I was like, oh, yeah, we are staying. Like, that is for sure admitted to the hospital. And, like, her tummy was getting pretty bloated. And it seemed, I don't know, it seemed like a toad that's been in water too long. That's how I always gauge her belly if it's too bloated. Is if it looks like a toad that's been in water too long. And so they checked her out, x-rayed. And when they laid her down to do x-ray, she started puking again. And I was like, yeah, we are for sure staying. And they're like, yeah, she's really full, like, we're getting her in. We're gonna do the IV antibiotics, we're gonna do irrigations and all of that. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And they're like, has she been sick? And I was like, well, yeah, she got a runny nose, but not anything that would make me think she's sick, like, I don't know. But and then so she did really good after that, and she responded well to the antibiotics and the fluids, and she was good and good and good. And they're like, yep, just keep monitoring, like, just watch for the puking and all of that. And then that April came and she had had a runny nose again. And so I had been, we were actually in for her like whatever month follow-up from her pull-through surgery a week before she got it. And we had mentioned that she had a runny nose and that she usually like doesn't tolerate the runny nose very good. Her body just doesn't like it. And they're like, hey, if she stops pooping again, like, let us know. And then if she pukes again, and she did, she started, like, she had a pretty good day. And then that evening, she kind of started getting fussy and...
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Whatever. And then the next day, I had messaged her team and I was like, she puked a few times through the night and like once this morning, but she hasn't puked since. And they're like, okay, that's kind of alarming, but like keep monitoring it. I was like, well, can I take her to our local hospital and have her like x-rayed there and then just have them send the x-ray to you so we don't have to drive 2 hours if it's nothing? And they're like, yeah, we could do that. And then so on the way there to the local hospital, she had started puking again. And I was like, oh yeah, nope, this is not good. So we went and got the x-ray, and then I didn't hear anything back from Children's or from our local hospital about what the results were. I was like, guys, like, what's going on? And they're like, yeah, we can't really read the, like, it's not a clear picture from what we got from your local hospital. So, and I was like, well, she's puking again, so I'm just gonna pack up and head that way. And we ended up missing like clinic time by like 30 minutes. So we had to go through the ER, and we were in the ER for like 5 or 6 hours while she was just puking and puking and puking. And they finally got us admitted and into a room, and it was the same thing. They suspected enterocolitis, and then she had rhinovirus and the metapneumovirus. And they're like, yeah, that's probably what caused it. Like, that happens a lot with these kiddos. And this time we were only in the hospital for 2 nights. And she responded well again. And then we just do the 7 days of flagyl at home, following up with orally. And they're like, as long as she continues eating afterwards, Lynn does, like, goes back to her normal pooping and stuff, you're good to go. I was like, okay. And then this past August was the same thing. She had a runny nose the week before, and then the following week she was fine all day, and then it hit like supper time, refused supper, which is not like her. She likes her food. And so we're like, oh, that's weird, like, why don't you want to eat? But maybe she was just too tired. And so she like chugged her milk, and then she ended up puking all over me. And I was like, oh, maybe you just drank your milk too fast, like, you've been fine all day, no fever, no nothing. And then she turned around, and we went and washed her up and washed myself up, and we got in the shower. And then when we got back out, dressed in our jammies, ready to go to bed, puked again all over me. And I was like, oh no, like, this is not good. And then she just kept puking. Every time she'd move, she would just like dry heave and puke. And I was like, nope, we're not even trying this time. It was like 11 something at night. I was like, we're going straight to Omaha. Like, and so we did. They admitted us And she hadn't puked since we left our house. So they're like, well, when's the last time she puked or whatever? And I was like, well, it was probably about 11. But it was a lot. Like, she puked a lot. And then it had turned like a dark brownish color. And we're like, nope, we don't like that. And she, like, every time she gets like to puking like that, is she just looks like she goes limp, and she just looks like her eyes just say like, help me, like, I don't know, it's just a look. And then it seems like every single time that she gets that look, we just know like she needs help. And so we went in, and she had rhinovirus again, and then an enterovirus, and so they did the same thing, fluids, antibiotics. But we only had to stay there from like that night into the day we got released, like in the afternoon, because she responded super quickly. We caught it super early. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what they told us, is just to keep monitoring, and hopefully, like, as she gets bigger and she's better about like releasing her poop all the time, and she just hopefully will grow out of the enterocolitis giving it so much. But hopefully we'll see. Hopefully her immune system gets a little better, because she seems to catch everything.
Yeah, but it does seem to be that kind of way at the moment. And it's, I guess as well, with having Hirschsprungs, we're probably more susceptible. I don't know, necessarily. It does seem to be that we are. Yeah, it does seem to be that we are a little bit more susceptible to bugs and viruses and all sorts of stuff, really. And then when it affects us, it really affects us. I think that's the other thing as well, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, she came from nothing to needing to go to Omaha in like 2 hours, maybe. Like, she goes down quick when she gets it.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's yeah. And I guess as well, from parental point of view, it's, you obviously just kind of sort of learn as you go, and you kind of pick up cues, I guess, in terms of, you know, this has happened, or, you know, her tummy looks like this, or maybe, like you said, she wasn't eating, and you think, right, something's wrong. And I guess it's one of those, now that you're kind of, yeah, 17 months in, you kind of you felt as though you can now sort of tell cues really, really quickly.
Oh yeah.
And just kind of, yeah, and just sort of say, oh, well, this has happened, so we're off to Omaha again.
Right. Pack your bag. Yeah. Rolling.
Yeah. And with it being obviously a couple of hours away, that's a fair old drive. Yeah. And obviously it'd be, I guess you probably answered this a little bit earlier, but are there times where you think, actually, I'll take her to the local hospital, or is it most of the time always to Omaha?
I think most of the time, like, I just think straight to Omaha, because, like, her surgery team's there. They know, like, what they're looking for. They're looking for, like, all the Hirschsprung cues. Like, when we go to the ER and they admit us, I was like, okay, she's been puking, history of Hirschsprungs. And they're like, Hirschsprungs? And it's like, right away, like, they're like, red flag. And I was like, yup. And so usually we always get admitted. And I'm just, I don't know. I feel like our doctor at our local hospital is really, really good. And I think that we probably could work with her and children's to, like, get what she needs there, especially now that, like, I know what she needs. I know she needs fluids, and I know she needs Flagyl through her IV. Like, that's what gets it going right away, like, jumpstarts her. And then we can do the oral Flagyl, and she does really good with it. She responds well, but I'm always scared of the, but what if this is worse? And then I want her to be with her surgery team, so they can know, like, what it all, like, the last time that we got admitted, they're like, well, we're kind of worried about, like, when kiddos with this have, like, the intestine surgery, that they're susceptible to the interception or whatever, when it get, like, sucks back in. And so that was the first time we had heard of that too. And they're like, we want to do a ultrasound on her too, to see if it's done that. And I was like, well, that's the first time they've done that too. Usually it's just x-rays. And so, yeah, the last time she got x-rays and ultrasounds, come here. And she tries to, and all of the testing and stuff. And so, yeah, that was new for us, but I was like, I mean, that's, I guess I'm always learning about more things that could happen with them. But yeah, it's been crazy.
Yeah, definitely. And for audio listeners, Loretta's just joined us. Hello, Loretta. She's thinking, who on earth is this strange guy on the screen? Never seen him before. We are talking about you, by the way, Loretta, just so you know. Just in terms of future as well, I know it's very difficult to predict with Hirschsprungs, and you never know quite what's quite round the corner, and obviously hope for everything being absolutely fine. But in terms of future things like both sort of medical and non-medical, what do you see for Loretta's future?
Well, hopefully pretty good. We're down to like every 6 months we go in for her surgery follow-ups, and they just do like just another x-ray to make sure everything's still healing good and everything. And after her pull through, like while they finished up that procedure, they did give her a Botox injection, and she hasn't had to have any follow-ups with that, but that was one thing that they mentioned that we'll watch for. If she like slows on her pooping or anything, starts having problems, we can do another Botox injection. But she's done pretty good with that. Hopefully we'll do, I think our next hurdle will be the potty training. Heard that's not gone so well with other people, but I'm hopeful that she's doing pretty good, that we'll be able to do that pretty good. She just can't have cow's milk. That's the only thing that we found dietary-wise, that she constipates pretty bad on that. So we just do plant-based milk, and she does fine with that. Yeah. But otherwise, hopefully pretty normal.
Fantastic.
Medical food.
I think that you're right. I think when it comes to potty training, especially in this Facebook groups, I know they're a bit of a mixed bag, the Facebook groups. There's some people can write the worst case scenarios. Some people can write, everything's going really, really well. I suppose for most people, they don't necessarily go on those groups if everything's going great, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
They do tend to write, this is terrible, this is bad, this is it. And I guess if you're quite new to it and everything, it possibly can scare you witless a little bit, and you think, oh no, everything's just going to be dreadful and horrible, and it's one of those where it's possibly the worst case scenario. That's really good to hear that, especially every 6 months as well. That sounds, obviously the further away time they want to see her, that the better, I guess.
But she seemed to manage to fill in those gaps with hospital stays, haven't you? But yeah, it's been pretty good. She's done, all things considered, she's done pretty good.
Excellent. That's really, really good to hear. It's see, if they're saying, I want to see you every month or every 2 weeks, you think, not great. But every sort of six months, is excellent news. And I guess you're probably starting the whole walking stage as well.
Running all over, aren't you? Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, well, that's fantastic. And I just want to say thank you so, so much for joining me. It has been such an interesting story. And I wish, obviously, you and Loretta and your whole family just the very best for what's to come in the future, both sort of medically and obviously trying to, touch wood, stay out of hospital as much as possible. And just for everything else, the potty training and the walking stages.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. You say bye.
Oh,
bye.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.